time to feel the rush of the round table. Brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Are you really an independent contractor? Find out in seconds for free at PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
A lot to talk about. Let's get right to it. Joining us for the round table for this Tuesday, the 26th of May, Principal at Navigator, Amanda Galbraith. Hello, Amanda.
Hello.
Also joining us, Queen's Park reporter for the Globe and Mail, Laura Stone. Hello, Laura.
Hey there.
You know, ladies, I'm starting to think we're going to change the tagline on this show as to the place where politicians come to yell at me. That seems to be the theme of the last, I don't know how many weeks. We continue, of course, to monitor the situation at King and Peter. We've had a shooting there this afternoon shortly after 4 o'clock. Let me just update everybody. We're hearing from one of our reporters. He has heard from a witness. Again, take this for what it is. This is a witness account that they heard maybe 5 quick shots, then a pause, then another. There was a white SUV that this witness says was on the hotel side of Peter Street that was hit with a bullet. He says that the witness does that 2 women, 1 adult, 1 younger, and a child were in this SUV, and as it was recounted to one of our reporters there, it appears to be a shooting. There were 2 groups of young men shooting at each other. At one point, he says that a woman claims they were in the middle and yelled out, "Don't shoot," trying to protect the child, if you can believe it. Nobody fired for at least that split second. We will hear more, of course, from the police chief in his own words as he makes himself available and comes to you live. Now, let's get into the big story that everybody was talking about today. It had to do with a report put together by Canada's military. Of course, they were called into 5 long-term care facilities here in Ontario to try to curb the spread of COVID-19. The premier today, quite emotional, quite upset when it comes to talking about the report.
It's so disturbing. When I read this, it was hard to get through. It was the worst report, most heart-wrenching report I have ever read in my entire life, ever.
Staff being aggressive with residents during medical procedures, residents crying and calling for help with no response for up to 2 hours. The improper use of protective equipment by staff and doctors, COVID-19 patients wandering the halls, being able to mingle and live in the same quarters as people who are not infected by COVID-19. Amanda, when you get to the cockroaches, insects, and ants at the bottom of the page, you know you've got a real problem on your hands.
Yeah, I made it to page 10 of this thing, and then I had to shut it down. It's incredibly difficult to read. The fact that it took the military to go in to figure this out, and can you imagine if they know the military is coming in, they probably tried to clean things up a little bit. It's a real... my grandparents were in long-term care homes. They're passed now, but if they were in those conditions or things happened to them, and I didn't, I just think it's heart-wrenching. I think... it's all fine and good for the premier and government to say this is awful and, you know, I'm outraged and angry, but, the patience for that is probably going to wear thin pretty fast. And I think they need to get really serious about a public inquiry into long-term care homes, which I think all of us could have predicted about 6 weeks ago. I think that's going to be an important part of this. What I don't think we should do is throw out like private activity in this system, because I do think, you know, in order to continue to serve all these people, we need to figure out a way that works. But these reports are shocking. And I don't know. I felt really heartsick reading it. I don't know how to say that in any other way, but it was difficult. And I'm going to make myself read the rest of it, because if they can live it, I can read it. Mm-hmm. But it's been a tough story.
Yeah, Laura, when I look at this, you know, I've had family members in these type of facilities. I've had to move one family member from a home to another home. It can be very difficult to hear that door close behind you as you walk out of those facilities and just hope. That's all you really have as a son, as a grandson, as a granddaughter, as a daughter. That's all you really have is just hope that your elderly relative is going to be treated properly. And in many cases, and this is just 5 out of 630, God knows what's going on everywhere else.
Yeah, I think that was one of the most disturbing parts of this. When you read this report, you're thinking to yourself, how long has this been going on and how many more places is this happening? This is only 5 homes. We know that there's dozens of others that have experienced outbreaks and that have had high death rates in their homes and high infection rates. So it's really, really hard to get through. I think, you know, aside from what the details of the report, which are really hard to read, I think another disturbing element of this story is the premier coming out today and saying that he only learned about this yesterday. And I don't understand how the highest echelons of the government did not know that this was happening, especially when you've had for the past at least month and a half, reports of all the horrendous situations that have happened in long-term care. We have a ministry dedicated to long-term care now, and a handle on at least the numbers in those homes. So how could it be that this situation has only come to the premier's attention as of yesterday? So I think we have a lot of soul searching to do, and the government has a lot of work to do in terms of oversight of these homes. And the minister today of long-term care talked about inspections that have happened in the homes. Well, obviously those failed to catch the most dire situation. So I do think that we are headed towards something more akin to a public inquiry, which the government had resisted up until now. They said that they are going to do an independent commission. The premier said today that he would be open to an inquiry now. So and potential criminal investigations as well. So I think the situation took a very dark and dramatic turn today. And I think it now seems inevitable that this will lead to a public inquiry.
Yeah, Laura makes a great point too, Ryan, when the premier, you know, very emotional today, talking about his mother-in-law, talking about his wife, Carla, being beside herself, wanting to go get her mother out immediately. You'll remember this is the same premier who was also emotional a month ago when we first started having this conversation about long-term care homes and the spread of the infection through long-term care homes. So to Laura's point, there had to have been briefings. If you were that vested, and I don't want to finger point, but it does need to be brought up. If you were that vested in your own family's best interests, including your own wife at home on a daily basis, there had to have been conversations within his office between then and today where it wasn't just you're learning about it for the very first time. Maybe the extent of it, I'll buy that.
Yeah,
there had to have been reports leading up to this.
I think what he was ultimately referring to was the breadth and the scope of all of this. You know, Amanda, I bring it back here, though, and, you know, we've interviewed two people from two different parties this afternoon on the show and, of course, played extensively the third party, which is the governing party now. We've heard from Andrea Horvath and the NDP. We've heard from Kathleen Wynne, who is not only in government, but also the premier of the province for quite some time. This is an issue that's been going on since the 1990s. And I made the point to the former premier, I believe it's a back burner issue. And you've worked in the world of politics, Amanda. I believe it's a back burner issue because it's just not sexy. It's out of sight, out of mind. It reminds me of infrastructure in a weird way, because it's one of those things that the general public doesn't want to hear come election time. It's not something that maybe they want to think of because it makes them feel guilty about the situation they've got going on in their own lives.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think that if you ran a campaign on we're going to properly fund long-term care homes, people would be like, thanks so much. I'm just going to go to the next person, right? That's not something that moves votes. It's just like water mains. And, you know, there's a reason that the federal government only funds new transit expansion. They don't like to fund like regular repair work because nobody wants to talk about that stuff. So I absolutely agree with you on that. I think this is a problem that is 20 years in the making. This did not happen underneath Doug Ford. It did not just happen underneath Kathleen Wynne. It did not just happen underneath Mike Harris. It is and Dal McGuinty. It is a successive issue that we have allowed to continue to fester to the point where, and frankly, COVID, I think, just threw, you know, gasoline on a fire that was already there. You know, if nothing good comes from this, if we leave this pandemic treating our elderly in a way that is actually respectful of the life and the contributions they've made and we fix this, then I think that is a good thing. But I don't think this is a problem for at any one government's feet. Unfortunately, it is a problem that Doug Ford and his governor are going to have to fix.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Laura. We had Andrea Horvath on here, and she said you didn't want to point fingers, and then, of course, the next breath was pointing fingers. Mm-hmm. I'd give their party a lot of credit, because this has been a front-burner issue, at least for the opposition, but it also highlights the fact that the opposition provincially, most of the time, can't get much done. They can't get wheels in motion. Of course, there have been exceptions, but, you know, this has been something that's been on their radar. It's been part of their platform, but still, you know, kicking and screaming. Howard Hampton was talking about this decades ago, and nothing got changed.
Yes, and this is a big NDP issue because it's also a big union issue, because a lot of these workers in these facilities belong to a union. But this is also how a lot of these situations have come to light as well, because of union leadership that has been talking about it throughout the COVID-19 crisis. I agree. I think this is not an issue that bubbled up in the last few months or even the last few years. It has been longstanding and it has been kicked by various governments. It does seem like there is some momentum now, though. This seems to have gripped people in a way that I don't think it has before. So I know the election is 2 years away, but I do get the sense that this government does want to make this one of their key pledges now, or one of their key issues over the next year or two. And I do hope that it does lead to some systemic change, because I think that Canadians are watching this and are absolutely horrified by what has been going on.
All right, let's take the last 2 minutes, shall we, to lighten the mood just a little bit and talk about the other big story, one of the other big stories this afternoon. The Leafs have made the playoffs, if there are, in fact, playoffs. The NHL announcing today will abandon the rest of the regular season, go straight into the playoffs with 24 teams instead of 16 if it is able to resume play. This is still very preliminary, Amanda, but I think it's a bit of an uplifting story for people. If we could have hockey back in, let's say, August and playoffs into September, all is not lost for the season we witnessed some months ago.
Sure, and if only I was a hockey fan.
Maybe you will be.
Maybe you know what? I've got nothing else to do other than drink, which is another story you guys sent to me about people drinking too much. Listen, it's great. I'm happy to see the Leafs there. I really, you know, being a Toronto cheerleader, it's fun whenever any of our teams are in the playoffs. I know we're all sort of reminiscing about 1 year ago today where the Raptors were. So, you know, even a little bit of fun with that, if it's feasible and everyone can do it safely, then I'm here for it.
Yeah, Laura, that's going to be a big part of it, right? The idea, you know, what's the testing going to look like? What's the monetary compensation going to look like? What about the teams that got left out of the entire equation? The league's going to have to figure that out. But at least they've got somewhat of a blueprint to get towards sports being back in people's lives.
Yeah, and I think people are really craving some entertainment right now, and things are really heavy, as we just, you know, talked about for the last 10 minutes. It's pretty depressing out there, and I think this will probably lift a lot of people's spirits. You didn't mention the Sens.
I'm sorry, who?
This is an ongoing issue with us, so we're going to I don't know much about hockey either, but go Sens, go, and I'll be excited. That are they one of the teams or
no they're not. That's why I didn't mention
no one
it's
cares.
Gone, Sens, gone.
Ooh,
that's
boy.
Actually what you meant, Laura.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
how about Edmonton? I'll trade you an Ottawa for an Edmonton and a Winnipeg. How about that? Because they're there.
Take it.
Laura, Amanda, thank
probably
you so much.
Snowing there.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
Thank you, bro.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.